Many years ago, at the time of the great scholar Sayyid Murtada, Sayyid Murtada was the brother of Sayyid Radi. Sayyid Radi is the famous scholar who compiled Nahj al-Balagha, the collection of sermons and sayings of Amir al-Mu'mineen and Khutab of Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam. His brother Sayyid Murtada was a great scholar, a renowned faqih, somebody who was very important in the history of developing Islamic law and theology and other areas as well. There was a visitor who came to Karbala from the country of India. And they say that when he came to Karbala, he was living very near the haram of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And given that he was from a faraway place, people took note of him. But they noticed that there was something curious about him. Whenever he would perform ziyarah of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, he wouldn't go in person to the shrine. They say that he would go up to the top of his roof, send his salam from there, and then come down. Now word began to spread about this, and they told Sayyid Murtada as well, too, being like the leading scholar, and he requested him to come and meet him. And after greeting him and talking to him, he says that, you know, this act that you're doing of doing ziyarah from the roof, that is something that is recommended for somebody who is far away. But we don't know of any such thing for somebody who is in the proximity of the haram. Rather, the etiquette that needs to be performed when you're right in the proximity of the haram is that you don't need to go to the haram. Of course, if you can, you go to the haram. But this thing here, it's a type of innovation. And so my recommendation is that you cease and don't continue to do this type of ziyarah. If you want to do ziyarah, go. The man says something very curious. He says that, you've asked me to do something which is very difficult. Would it be possible for me to give you some money? Even I would be willing to give you everything that I have, but don't ask me to do this thing. And Sayyid Murtada was even more perplexed, and he said that I'm not in any of need of your money. I'm just doing my duty in terms of telling you that this is the way to do it. So the man said that if that's what it is, then so be it. And he went home, he wore his best clothing, he made himself purified, and he made his way to the courtyard of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And there he, taking very slow steps, he first performed a sajda of shukr. He made his way closer and closer to the dhuri of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, walking very slowly with a lot of thought, a lot of concern, a lot of care. And when he came close to the dhuri, finally he set his sight on it. And he asked two questions. He says that, is this the place where the body of Imam Hussein alayhi salam fell to the ground? Is this the place where Imam Hussein alayhi salam was killed? And with that, this man from abroad, he took a deep breath, and that was the last breath that he took on this world. Now, I tell you this story, why? Sometimes it might cause a question that why did Sayyid Murtada ask him to do this? Didn't he know that this man had a special condition? Sayyid Murtada did his duty, the man was doing his duty. My point is that when it comes to Imam Hussein alayhi salam, the heart is something which needs to be filled with the love of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And the capacity that everyone has depends on how much effort they put in and how much tawfiq Allah gives them to have that capacity. Here you see somebody whose capacity was very great, his awareness was so incredible that for him to just go into the presence of the Imam, it was too much for him to bear. Sometimes, you know, we feel like we're so far away, we feel like that we don't have a chance. Sometimes we feel that, you know, that maybe we're just, it's not our culture or something. But this man wasn't even from that culture, but yet he had that type of sentiment and that type of awareness. So I hope that inshallah it can be taken in a positive way, as a way of opening up our hearts and try to get from the benefits of remembering Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Please say salawat. The topic that we've had the opportunity to be covering over the previous nights that I'd like to continue tonight, inshallah, has to do with dhulm and injustice and oppression. And we've had an opportunity to look at that topic from a number of different angles, sometimes looking at dhulm when done to other people, sometimes when it comes to dealing with people who are doing dhulm, and sometimes trying to see what is the most biggest act of oppression. Tonight, I would like to tie that topic to the, at least to some part of the discussion about mental health. And as you know, the communities, our communities here, other places, it's a common issue both within our community, outside of our community, is that there's a growing mental health disorder. It's something which is affecting many of our youth, even people who are older as well too. I've had college students come up to me and say things like that, you know, they've had serious problems with, like, for example, you know, media, to the fact where it affected them mentally. You could see that they've taken a mental toll because of, you know, the device and addiction. You have teenagers who have very low self-esteem and some issues with relating to depression. You have people who have family tensions and that causes, like, anxiety. You have people who, when they were children, something negative, they had a negative experience, and that leads to problems, you know, when they get older. And all of these are many incidents that many people are reporting, their issues, their actual reality in our community. Why is there such a increase in these incidents? What's happening in our society? We are becoming more and more of a materialistic society. And in this materialism, people are realizing that there is no happiness, there is no satisfaction, there's no comfort. And so this is creating, like, tensions. And from an Islamic perspective, what we would like to do is to make sure that we don't look at things just from the perspective of materialists, meaning that we want to look at things in a broader perspective. For example, right now there is a big push for wellness. I'm sure that you all heard about this idea of wellness. Okay? And sometimes, you know, wellness is something which is a serious issue. It's used as a term to describe, you know, people who have, like, let's say, serious disorders. And sometimes if you look at wellness, you feel like it's something which is kind of frivolous. I mean, you have, you know, people paying a lot of money to be able to go, let's say, swimming in, you know, cold water in the mountains. Right, or you have people who are paying to take time off of work so they can go to a special place and take a nap, right? Because it's in order for, and they're paying a lot of money for it, and it's in order to just get their wellness up. But sometimes it's referring to something, you know, more serious. Now, this idea of wellness, you know, we have to look at it from a Islamic perspective and say that, well, what is wellness? Is wellness the idea that I should be happy and I should never have any sadness or grief in my life? So, if that's the case and that's the understanding, then we can see why people are having problems, because that's not the way life works. Life has to have difficulties, it has to have sadness, it has ups and it has its downs. But if that notion is being pushed that being well means that you're always happy, then that is a problem. That's one. Number two is that if we want to look at it deeper, we should try to understand certain cultural trends. One of those trends is the trend of being opinionated on things, having an opinion on everything. This idea of liking or not liking is something which is fairly new, relatively speaking. And before, it wasn't the case that you had to have an opinion on anything. People who were experts were called in to have opinions on things. But it wasn't something that you were asked to have an opinion on every piece of news, every photo, every action, every activity, every trip, giving opinions on it. Now, when somebody is used to giving opinions on something and there's different events taking place in their lives, and those events, if they're looking at them, they're not liking the way that it's turning out, then what are they doing? They're giving their opinion. They're saying, I don't like this. I'm giving this a thumbs down. And so they end up complaining a lot. And this is something which you could say, at least to some extent, is stemming from a cultural issue. So that's number two. Number three is the culture of individualism, the idea that I want to be, well, individualism can mean different things, but this aspect of it, that everything revolves around me. I want to be in charge of everything. And, you know, the way that, like, the culture is working with, like, instant gratification, you know, you get what you want, you know, you just go to Amazon Prime and you can get it, like, the same day or, you know, the same in a few hours, right? Whatever it is, you want it your way. So again, when issues are transpiring and, you know, we're having events taking place in our lives, and maybe things aren't going the way that, you know, would be our preference, then maybe in this time and age, then we're reacting in a way which is stronger. You know, we're like, wait a minute, I want to be in charge here. This is another cultural problem that's taking place. So, and so what I mentioned until now is the idea of wellness. I mentioned the idea of opinions and the idea of being in charge. The fourth thing I want to say is that from an Islamic perspective, when we try to understand the idea of mental health and what are, you know, what can we, what is it that we can speak about? How can we like get something useful and understand it from an Islamic perspective? The typical materialistic perspective is very shallow. It doesn't look at the whole picture of things. Islam teaches us a worldview, and it teaches us ideology. It teaches us how to think about things and also what to do. So when you look at this world as being something which is just a random act, there's no sense or rhyme behind it. It just came to be. When you look at this world and there's and you see it as being a bunch of different actors who are just doing different things, and there's no one who's coordinating everything and keeping everything together. When you look at this world and you don't consider that there is a hereafter behind this, that there's some other realms behind it, then it becomes very hard to feel happy when things don't go your way. But Islam teaches us a different perspective. Islam teaches us that there's much more than just, you know, material, you know, beings and human beings and, you know, different things that they get and acquire. There's a lot more to it. Islam teaches us tools to be able to positively affect our spirit and our psychological state. Tools like when it comes to both on the spiritual level and when it comes to on the physical level. So for example, the tool of tawakkul, the idea of relying on Allah, right? The tool of sabr and being patient. And also actions as well too. For example, the idea of wudu being a source of happiness on a psychological and spiritual level. The idea of saying prayers on time being a source of happiness and satisfaction. The idea of reciting Quran being a way of dispelling grief from the soul. The idea of meeting believers being a way of removing grief from the soul. Right? These are very important discussions that need to be had when we're trying to analyze it from an Islamic perspective. So that's just an introduction. My point there was to show that there is something that Islam has to say, that as mu'minin, as believers, it's very much important that we look at this because it is something which is becoming a crisis. So I would now like to turn to, just like the previous nights, a verse of the Quran which I want to make the center of the discussion. Inshallah, you can help me with the salawat. Allah in Surah Al-Baqarah and also in elsewhere in the Quran, He describes the story of Bani Israel, and He mentions how He gave them so much. He says, for example, in one of the verses, He says, وَظَلَّلْنَا عَلَيْهِمُ الْغَمَامِ. We sent clouds to cover them. Right? They were journeying in the desert. It was hot. And God, out of His mercy towards them, as a special favor, He sent clouds to protect them from the sun. وَأَنْزَلْنَا عَلَيْهِمُ الْمَنَّ وَالسَّلْوَى. We sent down for them two special types of food. Manna and salwa. Salwa, they say, is quail, like a type of bird. And manna in English is translated as manna. It's there in the Bible as well too. They say that it was some type of special food that when the Bani Israel were traveling in the desert, well, they didn't have like farms, they didn't have animals, they didn't have a food supply. But there would be a particular time in the day before like sunrise, after Fajr, before sunrise, where there would be special food that they could take from, let's say, the plants and the rocks, and that would be something that would be very nourishing and very good tasting for them. They could make cakes from it. They could bake like certain like wafers from it as well too. Allah says that we sent down for them. We sent down clouds to cover them. We sent down food, manna and quail. كُلُوا مِن طَيِّبَاتِ مَا رَزَقْنَاكُمْ. Eat from these good things that we have given you. And then Allah says, وَمَا ظَلَمُونَ وَلَكِنْ كَانُوا أَنفُسَهُمْ يَظْلِمُونَ. They did not do ظُلْم to us, but rather they did ظُلْم to themselves. Now, if you're following the verse, right, probably, you know, there's a question that comes to your mind, is that why did, it seems like Allah switched topics right in the middle of the verse. Here he's describing a story about the people of Bani Israel, and then he switches to a comment about ظُلْم. Like, what's the relation between the two? This is the style of the Quran. Allah, when He reveals these verses, He wants us to think. Right? And Bani Israel, imagine, okay, there's these people who are being taken care of, they're being provided for, but what we know about them is that they were very ungrateful for those blessings. They didn't follow the rules that God had sent out for them. They disobeyed their prophet. They were weak when the prophet told them to be courageous. They worshipped, they took a cow as an idol, a statue as an object of worship. And so somebody who's reading these verses and they're thinking that, look at these Bani Israel, they were given so much by God, why weren't they grateful for it? Allah wants to talk to them. He's not talking to Bani Israel anymore, he's talking to them, people who are thinking. And He says that, look at these people, don't think that they did dhulm to us. They didn't do dhulm to Allah, but rather they did dhulm to themselves. Now, this is a very, I think if we look at this verse, there's a very deep concept here. It's the idea of making sure that God has the proper place in one's life. Because the dhulm means when you take something and you don't put it in its proper place. Allah is supposed to have a certain place in the life of a believer. And it can be at the time of Bani Israel, it can be at our time as well. Like this idea, for example, of God sending clouds to cover them when they're traveling in the desert. Would you rather have a cloud or would you rather have air conditioning? Right? If you think about it, what we have right now is better than what they had at that time. Right? The idea of food being ready for them only at a certain time and only one type of food. Well, in today's world, you know, food is available to us in many, many different forms and literally at the tip of our fingers, right? So Allah is saying that, look, there's a position, I mean, this is at least one of the interpreters, there is a position that Allah should be having in your life when you acknowledge that He is the source of your blessings. But you can do dhulm to that position. But you should realize that when you're doing dhulm to that position, that you're not actually doing dhulm to Allah, but you're doing dhulm to yourself. Why is that? Because Allah cannot be done dhulm to. Allah is not a zalim. He's never going to treat somebody in a way that they shouldn't be treated. He always gives everyone what's due or even more. And He can never be the object of oppression. No one can oppress God because everything is His. He's too powerful, He's too sublime to be oppressed. But rather, somebody who tries to do that, they go and they oppress themselves. No, what is the connection between that and the idea of being able to boost one's spiritual and mental health? It's that if you look at the connection between not having a proper understanding in place for God in one life with one's spiritual and mental health, you see that perhaps there's a strong connection that can be made there. I'll give you an example from the traditions of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. It's a hadith reported from Imam Sadiq alayhi as-salam. He says, "Man asbaha hazinan ala dunya." Whoever enters the morning and they are in a state of grief regarding their worldly situation. Okay, now that's unfortunately many believers, right, or a number of believers, sometimes they enter into their day and they should be enjoying their spirituality, right? They should be acknowledging, you know, the honor that they have of being an abd of Allah. They should be thankful for, they should be feeling gratitude towards everything that they have and the fact that they've been guided to the truth, the fact that they have an imam who is living and so many other blessings that they have. But in reality, they enter the morning when they wake up and they're actually sad. Right? They're grieving. They're not happy with their situation. Man asbaha ala dunya hazinan faqad asbaha ala rabbihi sakhita. The person who enters into the morning and they are in a state of grief, that person has entered into the morning and they're actually angry with their Lord. So what are they doing there? The position that Allah is supposed to occupy of the one who we admire, the one that we turn to, the one who is our solace, the one who's there for us in every time, the one that we are just so eager to please, instead, he's become an object of anger for us. Okay, now, in what way? Right? Why is it that if somebody is angry and about the world situation, they're feeling sad about it, then that becomes something where they're angry about the Lord? This is what I want to talk about, the connection between these two, inshallah. If you can say, Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. One of the teachings that the Quran has regarding the position of God in our lives is that He is the one who is running the affairs. Allah mentions this in many different ways, in a number of different verses. One of them is in Surah Yunus, where Allah says that He introduces Himself. He says that, if you want to know who I am, okay, this is me. Okay, Allahu alladhi khalaqa as-samawati wal ard fi sittati ayyam. Allah is the one who created the heavens and the earth in six periods. Thumma istawa 'ala al-'arsh, and then He ascended the throne. Now, I'm sure you've read this verse before in these type of verses. Allah talks about the throne, and I'm sure brothers and sisters are aware that these physical examples that are given are just ways to help us understand, because we know in our lives that when somebody ascends the throne, they're now assuming the power. They're in charge now. So Allah is saying that He created everything and then He is taking charge of everything as well. And then in that verse, Allah says, يُدَبِّرُ الْأَمْرِ. He is the one who is in charge and managing all the affairs. Everything is being controlled and run by Him. That is a very powerful statement. Because when we started out, we were talking about the materialistic worldview, the secular worldview. It's one in which everyone is just doing their own thing and everyone's an independent actor. But this perspective is that no one is an independent actor. The only independent actor is Allah. That means that every single thing that transpires in this universe, in my life, in your life, in my place, in your place, in everywhere, everything is under the control and under the management of one being. Now, that is a reality which can have a profound impact on the way that somebody views this world. Now, Allah doesn't just stop there. He goes on to explain something, which is a very important concept. Now, I on such a night at this time, maybe brothers and sisters are feeling a bit tired about some of these concepts. But I feel that these are things which are pivotal. They're very much fundamental for us to be able to be aware of these, for us to then be able to apply them practically. And I will be talking about the practical aspect of this soon, inshallah. يُدَبِّرُ الْأَمْرِ مَا مِن شَفِيعٍ إِلَّا مِن بَعْدِ إِذْنِ رَبِّ. There is no one who can do shafa'ah except for after Allah has given them permission to do shafa'ah. Now, in the Quran, sometimes shafa'ah is used for, typically we talk about shafa'ah. Like, for example, I want to seek the shafa'ah of Imam Hussein alayhi salam in the hereafter. I want him to be there for me, and on account of my relationship with him and the good deeds he might see from me, I want him to sort of plead my case to God. Right? That's something which is one of our beliefs. In the Quran, sometimes this word shafi is used for something else, which is a very important concept for us to understand. It's the idea that this world, even though Allah is completely in charge, Allah makes use of a system of cause and effects, but even that cause and effect has its effects because Allah gives it the ability to have those effects. So for example, if there is fire which is burning, yes, if you go and touch that fire, you will get burnt. But it's not because the fire independently has this property of burning, but that is something that, a rule that God has put into place, that that is the effect if you make, if this is the cause. You go and you touch it, and then the effect is you're going to get burnt. Now that's something which, again, it requires some thought, right? Meaning that everything that I do, if I want to, let's say, attract something for myself, some food or some risk or some money, I'm going to my job, I'm making a business deal, I'm creating a relationship, right? There's certain things that we do and certain protocols that we follow to do all these things, right? Like all of you guys have a certain routine that you follow normally on the weekdays, right? You might, for example, I don't know, wake up and then you do this and you do that, and there's a certain goal behind why you do what you do, right? Now, that you can go through all of that and you can think that, oh, these are just, you know, different things that I'm doing. They're independent. They're not connected. Or you can think of it in this perspective, that everything is being, there's a manager. There's somebody there who's managing it. Now, does that mean that everybody is doing things and they're just compelled to do them? They're like robots? No. Because one of the things that God has decreed is that people, human beings, have their free will. But this is part of the system that God has created. Even if somebody wills to do something bad, they disobey Allah, it's part of the will of God what will happen after that as well too. So whether people are doing good or whether they're doing bad, all of that is part of the system which God has created. Now, that's just a little bit of theoretical background. Now, practically speaking, I want to explain how that can be very important to understand as we're trying to interpret what's going on in our lives. So one of the very fascinating discussions that I'd like to look at briefly tonight is how is it that people react to different things that go on in their lives? And what is the typical response and what is the ideal response? Because this is something which can definitely have an effect in our health, you know, the way that we feel towards things. When you go to the Quran, there's a whole set of verses where Allah describes different ways that people react to different things that transpire in their lives. Sometimes good things happen to us, sometimes bad things happen to us. And according to one brilliant analysis by one of the scholars, his name is Sheikh Pasandideh, he says that if you look at all the verses and you put them together, there are four typical responses that people have when bad things happen to them, and four typical responses that people have when good things happen to them. And all of them, if you look at it from the perspective of everything being under God's command, all of them are incorrect. So I want to mention these four, both four things that people react when something bad happens and four things that people react when the good things happen, and then inshallah draw some conclusion from that. Please say salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. So when it comes to the, say another salah, please. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad. Negative events happen in our lives. It happens all the time, right? It can be somebody disappointing us. It can be in a relationship. It can be like the loss of a job. It can be a sickness, right? And it's often these difficulties that come up in our lives that are the source of a lot of grief for us. In the Quran, there are four ways that people respond to these events that are described. One of them, let's talk about the good events first. So sometimes good things happen to us, right? Like where, okay, we get a blessing, we get a, you know, some breakthrough, like we get a, you know, good, our investment comes through. Okay, so what are four typical responses? Number one, the Quran mentions the topic of the idea of farah, meaning that somebody, when something, like they get something, right, something good happens to them, they become very happy, but happy in a way that God is not in the picture. That's number one. Number two is fakhr, where when something good happens to them, like they, I don't know, get a degree or they get a promotion or they get a a car, or they have some blessing, like they have a good voice or they have good looks or something, then they start to look at themselves and feel pride over other people. That's number two. Number three is something called man', where Allah mentions in the Quran that human beings are such that when good things happen to them, they stop giving to others, right? They just hold back from that. And number four is something called i'rad, where when good things happen to somebody, they turn away from God and they go far away from Him. Now, as I'm saying these things, one of the ways that, you know, I would suggest that brothers and sisters can use this practically is to think about this, that God in the Quran is describing, you know, different personalities and how people react to things that happen to them in their lives. So where am I on this map, right? Because all of us, alhamdulillah, have some set of blessings, good things that happen to us, we think back, right? How is it that we react to these things? On the other hand, when negative things happen to people, there are four qualities that they can typically exhibit. One of them is the quality of qunut, where they despair, they lose hope. Number two is the quality of kufran, where when negative things happen to them, they become ungrateful to God for the good things that He's given them. Number three is something called jaza. Jaza is where they become anxious and worried when bad things happen to them. And number four, that the Quran mentions, is that there are some class of people that they never turn to God when good things are happening to them, but when bad things happen to them, they engage in dua to Allah. So that is a case where they do remember Allah. Okay, and even though I'm putting this in a category of the way not to react, of course making dua is always good, but the dua they're making is one where they're just calling upon Allah and there's no action behind that. Okay, and there's a lot of hopelessness along with that as well too. Now, what I mentioned here is four typical reactions to when good things happen and four reactions when negative things happen. And these have to do with God's knowledge of our personalities. He knows how human beings are. And He's saying that, look at, this is a typical response and reaction that you might have if you don't have a proper position for me in your life. Good things happen and you become like that. You turn away from me. Bad things happen and you become like this. You lose hope, you reject everything that came before. And I'm sure if we think about maybe people in our lives, we think about ourselves even, we can see that maybe we sort of shift between some of these things. It doesn't have to be that somebody always sticks with the same thing. Sometimes they shift, you know, from one or to the other depending on what the situation is. The Quran describes the people like Qarun. Qarun was somebody who, you know, he had so much wealth, right? Good things were happening to him, right? That he started to exhibit maybe, you know, all of these characteristics. He, you know, he was very happy with himself, right? He was priding himself over other people. He became bakhil. He prevented other people from getting access to his wealth. In fact, he used to oppress them and he had economic oppression going on. And he turned away from God altogether. And it's a story that's mentioned in the Quran as a historical event, but we have modern day Qaruns as well. You know, I don't know if you guys heard about the guy who, you know, he had a shirt sewn for him out of pure gold. Right, because he said, okay, I'm so rich, right? I want to have a shirt pure gold. And, you know, he's walking around this country where people are like, you know, very, very poor, and he's walking around with a solid gold shirt, right? And, you know, you got to wonder, you know, somebody who has so much money that they would put into a shirt, right? When people are starving on the streets, like, what kind of person are there? Where's God in their lives? And then, you know, just a matter of like a year or two after he sewed that shirt for himself, you know, he was, you know, a gang found him and they beat him up and they took his life, right? Now, that's the story of a modern day Qarun. And unfortunately, you know, in our own lives, we might see aspects of like Qarun-like aspects as well too. That when good things happen to us, we start to close up, right? How many people, for example, when they start to make earnings, they get too busy to keep their khums calculation, for example. Right? One of the requirements is that on a yearly basis, we have to give. It's not our own money. Right? But you know, things get busy, we stop caring about that type of thing. Right? How many people, when they get busy, they stop giving from the time that they have to do things which are necessary? Silat al-Rahim, making connection with their parents, making connection with their fellow brothers and sisters, helping out at the center. How many people, when life starts, you know, taking off for them and they start to succeed, you know, they start thinking about their dream house. And it's nothing wrong with owning a house, and you know, it's a good idea for mu'mineen to have homes and to have property. But you know, of course, everything in moderation. Whereas, you know, the idea of building a house for Allah, meaning like the masjids and the centers and those institutions that play the role of education and spirituality, like Islamic schools, that is something that people don't give priority to. So all of that is a type of reaction that is described in Quran for people who, when good things happen to them, where they don't give God his proper position in their lives. Now, on the other hand, right, when negative things happen, right, the Quran is describing that, look at your personality, if you don't have this type of greater awareness and you haven't given God his proper place in your life, and you're not, and you're interpreting events in the wrong way, then you can start to exhibit these negative characteristics. Right? What are they? We're being hopeless. Right? Why are you hopeless? Why does somebody become hopeless when something is taken away from them? It's because they saw that when it was given to them, that somehow it was their own. That somehow it came about because of their own planning and their own sort of like management. But if they realize that the root of that blessing and everything that transpired in order for it to come your way was not from yourself, then things would be different, right? They wouldn't feel hopeless because they know the same one who gave them that blessing and took it away from them is the same one who is there for them right now as well. The idea of somebody who, when something bad happens to them, the Quran says, "Inna al-insana khulika halu'a, idha massahu sharru jazu'a, wa idha massahu al-khayru manu'a." That human beings are created where they are kind of greedy. And when some negative event touches them, right? Like it's God, part of God's plan to test them or to give them a trial or take away something from them, then what happens is they become jazur, right? They become very anxious and worried. Why do they become anxious and worried? Because they see themselves as being, in charge and owning everything about themselves, right? The idea of kufran, there's some people when negative things and trials happen to them, they become ungrateful, and that can eventually sometimes lead to kufr. They stop showing up, they stop practicing, they just turn away from religion altogether. The Quran gives us examples of these type of people, and these are meant for us to ponder. The people of Fir'aun, Musa brought them miracle after miracle, and yet they became more and more rebellious. Right? That's something which human beings can have as well too. So this tonight was a somewhat lengthy introduction because it's a deep concept, and I'm trying to convey a deep concept in a short amount of time, but I felt that it was important enough that I had to try to tackle it. May Allah forgive me if I wasn't able to do justice to it. But what I'm trying to do is to set up a framework for being able to understand some very fundamental ideological concepts that have a huge impact on our spiritual health. Final point that I want to make about this is, and I'm going to give one example and then inshallah move to the masad. Final point is this, that if we want to have a takeaway from all of this, there are three things that if we come to understand, they can have a huge impact on how we interpret things that go on in our lives. Number one is that Allah is in charge of the affairs. We talked about that one. Number two is that everything, every decision he takes for a believer, it's something which is in their best interest. That's number two. Everything, even if they think it's something which is negative, it's still good for them. And number three is that one of our responsibilities, if we want to find happiness and we want to find peace and we want to find satisfaction in our lives, is to be happy with what Allah decides for us. Now, that happiness doesn't mean one of where, let's say there's a certain situation and we don't, and it's not, we feel like it's negative, that we just sort of give up and we don't try. No, but with whatever it is right now, one of the duties of a believer is to be happy with that situation. And this is something, brothers and sisters, that we see time and time again in Karbala. And this is why Karbala is not just a story of, you know, humanitarians or people who were self-sacrificing. It was a story of people who were deep-rooted in their iman, and they did what they did, and they showed us what it means to be a true believer. There's so many examples of this from the life of the Ahlul Bayt, from the companions. I'll give you one example, and then inshallah move to the Masail. Habib ibn Mudahir was a great companion. He was very knowledgeable. He had a mountain of faith. And he wants to do something to help Imam Hussein alayhi salam. So he asked permission to go to the nearby tribe of Banu Asad and to get soldiers to come and assist the Imam. He's thinking that, look, there's, let's say, 72 companions. He can get a few hundred of Banu Asad and maybe multiply the number of soldiers by like triple them or quadruple them. What an amazing service to the Imam. So the Imam gives him permission. He goes and gives a passionate sermon. He convinces many of them, especially the young ones, to go and join Imam Hussein Islam. And they get ready to go. But on the way to where Imam Hussein is camped in Karbala, the army of Umar ibn Sa'd intercept them. And they don't let them go. And Habib ibn Mudahir has to return back to his Imam empty-handed. He had so much hope that he would be able to fulfill this service, but yet he comes back empty-handed. And when he's facing the Imam and he's telling him that I couldn't do it, it was from an outwardly perspective of failure. A secularist would say that this is what a waste of time. I feel so disappointed. I feel like I'm lost. But when he tells the Imam that I wasn't able to do it, what does the Imam say? The Imam says, La hawla wa la quwata illa billah. And this is enough to give solace to the heart of Habib ibn Mudahir. There's profound depth in that statement. I hope brothers and sisters inshallah can ponder upon that. It very much relates to the topic of how we interpret events and what it means to give Allah the proper place in our lives. May Allah Ta'ala help us to understand the teachings of the Quran and the Ahlul Bayt, apply them to our lives and spread them to others. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Tonight we would like to inshallah cover the masaib of a very, very great individual. It's a very sad story. May Allah Ta'ala help us to do justice to being able to remember the sacrifice of the flag bearer of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. We say in the ziyarah for Hadrat Abbas alayhi salam, we send our salams to him and then we say that you are the one who was the brother who defended his brother. You are the one who answered the call and responded and obeyed his Lord. You are the one who is seeking those high levels of servitude that most people are too weak to be able to attain. There's one characteristic of Hadrat Abbas alayhi salam which shines, which is that he is somebody whose main purpose in life was to protect the religion of Allah and to serve the cause of the Imam alayhi salam. The water bag, brothers and sisters, is a symbol. Alhamdulillah, we're blessed with many young people here. The water bag is a symbol. And for us, we need to look at that water bag that he is protecting as our religion and the mission of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. That it is our responsibility to protect it for ourselves and to fulfill the mission that that religion has of establishing justice and the government of justice with the Imam of our time. So as we're crying over him and seeing what he did to protect that water bag with his own body, let us ask ourselves, what are we doing to protect our own religion and the greater missions and ideals of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasallam. Sallallahu alayka ya أبا عبد الله صلى الله عليك يا ابن رسول الله صلى الله عليك يا ابن أمير المؤمنين وابن فاطمة الزهراء أيها الشهيد بكربلاء. Peace and blessings be upon you, our beloved Imam Hussein, and upon the pure souls who are buried with you in Karbala. Peace and blessings be upon you, O Imam Hussein, and upon your blessed family who accompanied you to Karbala, upon your children, and upon your sister Zainab and Umme Kulthum, and upon your brother Abbas. It was a day of Ashura where the companions one by one went forth and gave their sacrifice. Hadrat Abbas alayhi salam was watching with his brother as the events unfolded. Hadrat Abbas was no ordinary member of the army. He was Qamaru Bani Hashim. He was the moon of Bani Hashim. He was so beautiful and brave that his face was like the moon in all of its splendor and glory and beauty. Hadrat Abbas alayhi salam was the flag bearer. This is the most important position in the army. He was the commander. When anyone would feel down and feel worried, they would look at that flag flying high and they would know that the flag is still standing. There is still hope. Hadrat Abbas alayhi salam is serving his duty. He is serving his imam. One by one, the family of the imam go forward and they also ask permission to enter the battlefield. Why is it that Hadrat Abbas alayhi salam is waiting, watching? Definitely he also wants to go and show his sacrifice to his imam. But perhaps Hadrat Abbas knows that he is the one that the imam is counting on. After all, there are the tents with the ladies and children. And while Hadrat Abbas alayhi salam is there, Imam Hussein alayhi salam knows in his heart, he is confident that the enemy will not dare to go towards the tents. He knows that his position is special to the imam. He, after all, he is the flag bearer. So he waits and watches until finally he is the only man left in the army. He goes to his brother. He says to him, "Oh, my brother, will you give me permission? I'm tired of life with these munafiqeen. I now wish to seek revenge for the blood that they have spilled. Oh, my brother, will you give me permission?" Imam Hussein alayhi salam's eyes begin to water. He says, "Oh, my brother, if you are martyred, then my army will be dissipated." إِذَا مَضَيْتَ تَفَرَّقَ عَسْكَرِينَ. Hadrat Abbas represents the army of Imam Hussein. While he is there, it's as if the whole army is there. But when he is not there, it's as if the whole army has been destroyed. But Imam Hussein alayhi salam knows that this is the wish of Hadrat Abbas. He tells him that if you wish to fight, then I have a mission for you. You see these children here. Can you hear the cries of Al-Atash, Al-Atash? Can you go fetch some water for them? Hadrat Abbas alayhi salam takes this mission to his heart. He has to serve the cause. He goes to the enemy army and first talks to them. He says that, "Don't you see these children? It's a hot day. Can you give us some water?" Maybe he told them that you have already killed so many of the menfolk. Who is left do you want to fight? Just give some water for these thirsty children. But Shimr, la'natullahi alayhi, responds to him at the top of his voice. He says that we will never give you even a drop of water. Even if the whole earth was covered with water, we wouldn't give you any of it until you give bay'ah to Yazid. This is the harsh treatment that Abbas alayhi salam is receiving from them. He realizes that there's only one thing he can do. He gets on his horse and he starts going towards the river. Brothers and sisters, mourners of Imam Hussein, picture the scene. There is one man, there is the river, there is a whole army in between them. I don't know how it's possible for one man to go against an entire army and to break through and to make it to the other side. But I do know that this is the son of Haydar. This is the son of Amir al-Mu'mineen. This is Hadrat Abbas alayhi salam, the son of Ummul Baneen. Hadrat Abbas fights valiantly. Somehow he charges forward. The enemy peels to the side. Somehow he makes it to the water. Now he has to fill the water skin. And now he is faced with the choice. Should he take some water and drink it from himself? Maybe he can get some energy and fight better. They say that maybe he took some water in his hand and thought about it, but then afterwards he threw it back in the water. He says to himself, "Oh my soul, oh my soul, after Hussein, how can it be possible that you think about living? Hada Husseinun Sharibul Manuni وَتَشْرَبِينَ بَارِدَ الْمَعِينِ. This is Hussein, and he is drinking death, and you wish to drink water. There is no way that you can do this. هَيْهَاتْ مَا هَذَا فِعَالُ دِينِ وَلَا فِعَالُ صَادِقِ الْيَقِينِ. No one who is truthful and is a man of religion would ever do such a thing. Look at the sacrifice of Hadrat Abbas with a thirsty mouth, a weary body. He fills the water skin and now he turns back. Maybe he can hear the cries, the children. Maybe he thinks that they are hopeful now that they see him at the river. He has to get the water skin back to the children. He has to fulfill the command of his imam. He sets forth, but now the enemy has even more of a motivation to attack him from all sides. The arrows flow, the swords are being taken out, the spears are being thrown at him. Suddenly, somebody strikes him. What kind of blow is it? He cries out, "Inqata'tum yamini." If you strike off my right hand, fa'inni uhami abadan an dini. I will always defend my religion. وَعَنْ عِمَامٍ صَادِقِ الْيَقِينِ نَجْلِ النَّبِيِّ الطَّاهِرِ الْأَمِينِ. I will always defend my religion, even if it be with my right hand being cut off. I will always defend that pure imam, the grandson of the Messenger of Allah. He shifts his sword into his left hand, the water skin is hanging from his chest. But after a while, the enemy surrounds him. The blows are being dealt on his body. Suddenly he cries out, "They have cut my left hand. They have cut my left hand. قَدْ قَطَعُوا بِبَغْيِهِمْ يَسَارِي وَأَصْلِهِمْ يَا رَبِّي حَرَّ النَّارِ. Oh my Lord, send them into the fire of hell. They have cut my left hand." But now it's just him. His sword is no longer of use. He has the water skin to protect. He is still on his horse. The water skin is on his chest. The enemy sees that they have to come and attack him. One of them hides behind a tree and he ambushes him. Suddenly we hear a cry. If we were there, we might have heard this cry in the battlefield. Alayka salam ya Aba Abdullah. They say, when they gave news to his mother Ummul Baneen in Medina over what happened to Abbas, She said some poetry. She says, oh, the one who saw my son Abbas, tell me something. Tell me the story of what happened. Is it true or is it false? They say when they cut off the hands, they took a rod of iron and they struck him on his head. Is that true? My dear son, I know, my dear son, I know that if they take away your hands, and if you had your hands, they would never have struck you in that way. They could have never stopped you. But the only reason they could do this to you is that they cut off your hands. When Imam Hussein alayhi salam, I don't know how he made his way to his brother's body, but when he sees what has happened, the flag has now fallen on the ground. Imam Hussein alayhi salam cries out, Al-an inkasarat dhahri wa qallat hilati. My very backbone has been broken. After the departure of Abbas, there is no hope for any outward victory in this battle. Ala la'natullahi ala al-qawm al-zalimin wa say'alamu al-lazina zalamu ayyamun qalibin yanqalibun. We ask Allah Ta'ala to accept these tears from us. We ask Him to make our hearts always be alive with the remembrance of Allah and the love of the Ahlul Bayt. We ask Him to forgive us our sins. We ask Him to forgive our parents. We ask Him to grant all those who are needy their hajat, all those who are sick, may He cure them. May He reward all the marhumin and marhumat of this gathering with the reward of this majlis. May He hasten the reappearance of the Imam of our time. May He relieve the oppression of all those who are oppressed in this world, whether they be Sheikh Zakzaki and his followers, whether they be the imprisoned shuyukh in Bahrain, whether they be the Palestinians, whether they be the oppressed in Yemen or anywhere else in this world. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
يا مهدي يا مهدي أدركني أدركني يا مهدي يا مهدي أدركني أدركني همه زمزمه کنند يا مهدي يا مهدي أدركني أدركني يا مهدي يا مهدي أدركني أدركني يا مهدي يا جدائی رسیده ای برادر مرا می کشی جان مادر پناه حرم یا ابوالفضل مکن بی کسم جان حیدر یا عباس ابو فاضل ابو فاضل ابو فاضل یا ابو فاضل Fazel, Abu Fazel, everyone, Ya Abbas, Abu Fazel, Abu Fazel, Abu Fazel, Ya Abbas, Abu Fazel, Abu Fazel, Abu Fazel, Ya
سنگین سینه بزن.
جدایی رسیده ای برادر، مرا میکشی جان مادر، پناه حرم یا ابوالفضل، مکن بی کسم جان حیدر، به مانه همه هست خیمه، امید همه کودکانم، که بعد از تو دیگر به دنیا دعا می کنم تا نمانم. مرا می لشکر، مرا ای دلاور، مرا میر لشکر، مرا ای دلاور، که بعد از تو بی کس شود این برادر. مرا میر لشکر، مرا ای دلاور، که بعد از تو بی کس شود این برادر. یا عباس، ابو فاضل، ابو دل مکش پا چنین روی این خاک.
ماشاءالله.
مکش پا چنین روی این خاک، دلم را مکن پاره پاره، که غارت شود بعد تو آر، هم انگشتر و گاه و باره. ببین مادرم را که نالان، زند نال با عشق و افغان. بنیه بنیه بنیه، علم دار من گشت قربا، ببین قاتل تو کند خنده بر من، ببین این قاتل تو کند خنده بر من، علم دار و میرم مرو از بر من.
هر کی بلده بگه
ببین قاتل تو
کند خنده بر من،
کند خنده من،
علمدار و میلم
آرو میرم مرو از بر من. یا عباس ابو فاضل، ابو فاضل، ابو فاضل، یا عباس ابو فاضل، ابو فاضل، ابو فاضل، یا عباس ابو فاضل، ابو فاضل، ابو فاضل، یا عباس ابو فاضل، ابو فاضل،
فاضل. خدایا ببین هست زینب شده یک سر قارت اینجا، نه مشکی، نه دستی، نه چشمی، نه دیگر نشانی ز سقا. ببین این همه گرگ نامرد، تن یوسفم را دریدن، میان دو نهر پر از آب، چه عدشان سرش را بریدن. خجل است و باشند همه کودکانم، تو رفتی و دیگر نمانده توانم. یا عباس
ابو فاضل، ابو فاضل، ابو فاضل، یا عباس ابو فاضل، ابو فاضل، ابو فاضل.
حسین مصباح الهدى، حسین سفینة النجم، حسین مصباح الهدى، سفینة النجا، حسین مصباح الهدى،
حسین مصباح الهدى، سفینة النجا، حسین مصباح الهدى،
شاه وفا اول فاس، شاه وفا
اول
فاس، شاه وفا اول فاس، اول فاز، اول فاز، اول فاز، شاه وفا، شاه وفا، شاه وفا، اول فاز، اول فاز، تو شهریاری فاطمه تباری، تو شهریاری فاطمه تباری، مانند حیدر همتا نداری، همتا نداری، ای روح احساس رنگ و بوی از یاس، ای روح احساس رنگ و بوی از یاس، یا کاش فلکر اکشف کردی عباس، اکشف کردی عباس، شاه وفا، شاه وفا، شاه وفا، اول فاز، اول فاز، اول فاز، اول فاز، شاه وفا، شاه وفا، شاه وفا ابوالفضل تو نور عینی ماه عالمینی تو نور عینی ماه عالمینی تنهای تنها ارتش حسینی ارتش حسینی گل کردی عباس کوه دردی عباس گل کردی عباس کوه دردی عباس ساده بگم من خیلی مردی عباس خیلی مردی عباس شاه وفا شاه وفا شاه وفا زهرا سرشتی رمز سرنوشتی زهرا سرشتی رمز سرنوشتی جنت نمیخوام تو خودت بهشتی تو خودت بهشتی دلخانه تو دیوانه تو دلخانه تو دیوانه تو جای رقیه روی شانه تو روی شانه تو شاه وفا شاه وفا شاه وفا اول جانم اول فاز اول فاز اول شاه وفا شاه وفا شاه وفا بر نشانم میرسد هر لحظه بوی کربلا بر نشانم میرسد هر لحظه بوی کربلا بر دلم ترسم بماند آرزوی کربلا بر دلم ترسم بماند آرزوی کربلا تشنه آب فراتم ای اجل مهلت بده تشنه آب فراتم ای اجل مهلت بده تا بگیرم در بغل قبر شهید کربلا تا بگیرم در بغل شهید کربلا یا حسین یا حسین شهید کربلا یا حسین یا حسین یا حسین یا حسین شهید کربلا حسین یا حسین یا حسین شهید کربلا حسین یا حسین یا حسین شهید کربلا ای اهل حرم میرو علم دار نیامد ای اهل حرم میرو علم دار نیامد علم دار نیامد علم دار نیامد سقای حسین سید و سالار نیامد سقای حسین سید و سالار نیامد علم دار نیامد ای اهل حرم علال عباس و ویلا حسین تنهاست و ویلا علال
عباس و ویلا حسین تنهاست و ویلا علال عباس و ویلا حسین تنهاست و ویلا علال عباس و ویلا حسین تنهاست و ویلا علال عباس و ویلا حسین تنهاست و ویلا علال عباس و ویلا حسین تنهاست و ویلا علال عباس و ویلا حسین تنهاست و ویلا علال عباس و ویلا حسین تنهاست و ویلا علال عباس و ویلا حسین تنهاست و ویلا علال عباس و ویلا حسین تنهاست و ویلا علال عباس و ویلا حسین تنهاست و ویلا علال عباس و ویلا حسین تنهاست و ویلا علال عباس و ویلا حسین تنهاست و ویلا علال عباس و ویلا حسین تنهاست و ویلا علال عباس و ویلا حسین تنهاست و ویلا علال عباس و ویلا حسین تنهاست و ویلا علال عباس و ویلا حسین تنهاست و ویلا علال عباس و ویلا حس Sick, 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 sick. Oh! Naro Abbasam, Naro, 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 Naro Abbasam, Naro. Abbasam Naro, oh mashallah, Naro. من به این جسم نحیفم قانعم، جون زینب این کم و ازن نگیر، تو برا تو بری تمام کارم، به خدا خنده هاشون و ببین پاش و امیر، کار من افسوسه کار تو دلداری، بگو داداش من را تنها نمیذاری، بگو هنوز عباس واسم علم داری، نرو عباسم نرو، نرو عباسم نرو، نرو عباسم نرو، عباسم نرو، نرو عباسم نرو، نرو عباسم نرو، نرو عباسم. من به این جسم نحیفم قانعم، جون زینب این کمو از من نگیر، تو بری تمام کارم، به خدا خنده هاشون و ببین پاش و امیر، کار من افسوسه کار تو دلداری، بگو داداش من رو تنها نمیذاری، بگو هنوز عباس واسم علم داری، بری میمیرم نرو، عزا میگیرم نرو، بری میمیرم نرو، عزا میگیرم نرو، بری بعد زینبو به کی بسپارم نرو، همه نرو عباسم نرو، 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 نرو
Abbas, we live your story of victory and glory. Abbas, we live your story of victory and glory. Abbas, we live your story of victory and glory. Abbas, we live your story. Glory, the son of Ali, like him in bravery and every deed. Zainab's protector, you were an helper in every need. You were the pillar, the banner bearer of our Imam. Gave him your life to heaven, you rose, you gave your salam. Your shrine is peace and glory. We long to live your story. Abbas, we live your story. A victory and glory. جسمك توزع وجفوفك أوسع من كربلاء. حلمي أرسمك ما تكفي جسمك أرض وسماء. يا أوفى حارس جنح النوارس يحمي الكلام. يعني بحضورك كل اللي يزورك سلام سلام. نبض القلب عباسي ملك ملك إحساسي. عباس we live your story. Abbas, we live your victory and glory. We travel thousands of miles and oceans to be with you. We travel thousands of miles and oceans to be with you. Bring you our hajat, we make our da'wat, you see them through. With you we find peace, your shrine is a piece of paradise. With you we find peace, your shrine is a piece of paradise. May Allah grant us, upon you let us lay our eyes. Yours is the land most holy, you are our life and story. Abbas, we live your glory, a victory and glory. Abbas, we live your story. Abbas, we live your story. Glory, جودك مليته شبدك نسيته ضامي بقيت صورة عضيدك مرسومة بيدك يا المارويت قطعت يمينك زادت حنينك يم الحسين قطعت شمالك قل احتمالك مصيوب عين علمني ارفع راسي ملك ملك احساسي عباس we live your story.
Abbas, we live your story. La ilaha illallah. La ilaha illallah.
Muhammadan Rasulullah. La ilaha illallah. La ilaha illallah. Muhammadan Rasulullah. Aliyan waliyullah. Aliyan waliyullah. Aliyan waliyullah.
Nadi Ali, ya mudhhir al-ajaib. Nadi Ali. تجده هون لك في النواهب كل هم وغم سينجلي كل هم بعظمتك بعظمتك بنبوتك بنبوتك بولايتك علي 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 حسين 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 العجل بقية الله العجل يا حجة الله العجل بقية 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 الله يا رب الحسين بحق الحسين اشفي صدر الحسين بظهور الحجة يا رب الحجة بحق الحجة اشفي صدر الحجة
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد